understand more about death. Something left. What happens? What does science say? What happens when people die? No one had any answers. And then I heard something very remarkable. The mind is not the brain. And I'm like, what? She had very little pain, very little discomfort. Her mind actually had the power to pacify her pain. But it was more about inner development. I thought, this is really cool. I want to do this. And then, the day that I die, I'm ready. I think that's a meaningful life. And then, on the day of our death, we'll have no regrets.
Gamlam, lovely to be with you today, and thanks for dropping in to the podcast. I'm really looking forward to this conversation with you.
Thank you, Adam. It's lovely to be here.
Today, this conversation, I really want to explore with you, in essence, how we can all get to live, feel like in our hearts, we're living our best life every day by understanding really more deeply in our hearts that this may be our only day. So I thought you'd be perfect for this, and part of this is because of your background story, the journey you've had to where you are today and living a Buddhist way of life, living as an ordained nun. It all really started a long time ago for you, and I'd love to hear first from you your background in that way and how it led into the way of life you live today.
Well, I spent my early life receiving a degree in science of nursing. I always wanted to be a nurse because I thought I could bring benefit in the world. That was sort of a subtle goal, though. So after I received my degree in nursing, I spent about 20 years in high-tech nursing, intensive care and cardiovascular care, open-heart surgery. I loved all that. I just loved the activity and the excitement of it, and being with people, of course. But I was pretty scientific, and I liked fixing things. I liked fixing bodies. So after a while then, after some years, 20 years, I loved it, but it was time for me to do something else. And I moved to New Mexico and located myself in the rural part of New Mexico. And there weren't any jobs in the field that I was in. And so I ended up as a hospice nurse, and it became a special door through which I was able to enter the world of natural death. I got to see people die in a natural way, and that was very different for me. So then I spent the next 7 or 8 years doing that in rural New Mexico. It was quite a journey. What was remarkable for me is that I had no machines, I had no physicians, I had nothing but just myself and my good heart and a few little nursing tools to help people actually die at home. And they were dying in areas where it took a four-wheel vehicle to get in to see them. They were so grateful. It was so different. And I had to learn, I had to experience death, the dying process. And it took a lot longer than I thought. You know, I was used to controlling that. We control that in the hospital setting in many ways, whether it's taking people off a ventilator or trying to save their life if they have an arrest. I was mostly doing that. The first natural death that I witnessed, I thought, okay, I kept looking at my watch. There are no vital signs. And the family was surrounding this woman, and I thought she was gone. But she kept living. And it took, I think, 27 hours. I thought, this is amazing. I kept waiting. None of my clinical skills worked because everything that I relied on wasn't working, and she was still alive. And I learned so much in that first experience, mainly that I didn't know much about death. And then it finally happened. just a normal death at home. And I felt even then something leaves, something left. She was alive. Everybody is communicating with their mother. And then she was gone. And even with that first death, because it was such a long one, and it was my first one, a natural death, I thought, what is it that leaves? I was very curious by this. And so I kind of kept that was like a backdrop of all my experiences over the next years. And I kept seeing that happen over and over again. My hospice colleagues, I would ask them things like, what happens? What does science say? What happens when people die? No one had any answers. So I started reading medical literature, and I was a little bit sort of fixated on this, and I thought it was curious that no one was curious. So I kept that as a sort of a denominator underlying everything that I was doing, looking for that answer. I thought I'd get the answer. Many people go into hospice. I loved my time there, and I deeply respect hospice workers and their opportunity to be taught by the dying. A lot of people go into hospice in order to, I think, get over their fear of dying. I probably did, but I didn't know that. And so I spent a lot of time just gathering scientific data, waiting to somehow figure out or learn from someone, even or any doctor, to explain to me really what is death. What does it mean? And why is it so dramatic at the end that clearly something leaves? That doesn't sound very scientific, something leaves. But it's the best way I can describe it. And I actually asked different people, what do you think at the end? You know, when you lost your loved one or even your pet? I sort of solicited that same answer. I don't know, something leaves. They left. They left, and I'm like, well, where'd they go? Anyway, it wasn't very scientific from one point of view, but it became a key component to my future. So,
it's interesting because with that story, it's like you have obviously come from being very grounded in the scientific background and also very much in that, let's say, the more unnatural way that somebody dies in hospital and so forth, and you're kind of faced with the reality of a natural death and that long procedure of people's dying in that way. But for you, it was obviously opening a door to really wanting to explore that process of death and dying. And so as you look in the medical text and you're not finding the answers, of course, at that point, from my understanding, as you started then seek the answers more and more, and then you met, I think you went to a Buddhist center and had some teachings on death and dying, and then in a sense that kind of opened up this door. So what was it in that part of your journey that then you started to see, actually, there's something here?
Eastern religion fascinated me a little bit. I had quite a few friends that were involved in various expressions of Eastern, kind of Eastern Buddhism. And I understood a little bit that it was the science of the mind. And I thought, I might check that out. So I called around in Albuquerque many years ago and kind of to figure out where I could go check. And there was only one person that answered the phone. The rest were all machines. And this person was very, very impressive to me. You'd probably like them because they were Irish. And they said, you know, I'm teaching on a topic called Understanding the Mind. And I'm teaching at the university at the Continuing Education Center. So I thought in my little scientific cocoon, I thought, great, I'm going to go to the university. I feel safe. And I could explore this religion there. And I went at him, and it was a Monday night. I don't think I understood a lot of what she was saying, but that particular teaching was about there's three levels of mind. And then I heard something very remarkable. The mind is not the brain. And I'm like, what? The mind is not the brain. And the brain dies with the body, and the mind continues. Well, I was hooked. I thought, okay, this might be it. So then I learned a little bit more about the levels of mind. And my scientific, probably my scientific faith, was validated. I thought, yeah, of course. This feels scientific. It doesn't feel religious to me. It's just about my mind. And I wonder if that very subtle mind that she's talked about, maybe that's what continues. Maybe that's what I've been seeing. I was like a little kid that got so excited that I might be finding an answer. Now, of course, I didn't get all that in one night. But I knew that I was hearing things I'd never heard. I'd never heard anything about the mind being different from the brain. And I thought, wow. And I didn't feel pushed. It didn't feel very religious because it was in the university setting. And so I went every Monday for the next 2 months. And actually, I never stopped because I kept getting more and more information. And maybe this isn't where to talk about this, but what happened is almost immediately, I don't mean that night or that week, but within the first few months, my clinical practice started to change. There's just a little part of me that felt I was getting an answer. So my curiosity, along with my compassion, were increasing as I was in the death arena. And in the next year, 2 years, where I was constantly attending these classes about the mind and learning how to work with your mind, make it more positive, especially when you're dying, I thought, yes, that's what I need to help people do. Just by my very understanding, is what if I could help them be peaceful? And instead of just fixating on their body, which is still my job as a nurse, and I never brought any of my new interest verbally or practically to the arena, but in my heart, I was really a different nurse.
In that experience that you were now getting a little bit of insight into the death and dying process, what were the insights you were beginning to get? And how are they beginning to affect, as you say, they were beginning to affect at some level how you're caring for people, even if you're not expressing externally in your heart, you're beginning to understand that. So what were those insights that you started to understand and begin to apply in the way you were approaching your work?
I think the one that stands out the most for me is a woman who was a professor at the university, and her husband was also a professor. And I had permission at that point to wear my my ordained robes, as long as I wore like a top like this. My supervisor said, because one day I asked if I could wear my robes to at work because I was in retreat, would she mind if I did that? And so she said, well, wear them to work and I'll see. And I wore them to work and she said, actually, I think you look better. You could wear those. So that was nice. So I always wore a little top. And when I walked into this family, this woman said, I want to know what you are. And I said, well, I'm your hospice nurse. She said, well, what else are you? And I said, well, I am a Buddhist nun. And she said, I want to make sure you don't proselytize. I'm an atheist, and so is my husband, and we don't do religion. I said, absolutely. It's private. It's my private life. And I will respect that, you know. So we developed a very close relationship, actually. I took care of her probably 6 months or so. Got to know her and her husband very well. And what was interesting to me and the uncommon observation that I now had was that this woman, a devout atheist, in her 50s, at the prime of her life, actually, very well respected professor. People were very sad. She had a vicious cancer, ovarian cancer, which had caused a bowel obstruction complete. Now, I don't know if you know anything, but that normally is so painful. And this woman didn't take, she hardly took any medicine. And I kept offering, and she said no. And she couldn't eat. This was 6 weeks. People think you die if you don't eat. She is 6 weeks, no food. And her daily practice was making meals for her husband so that he had enough meals for as long as possible after she died. So she'd create meals every day, freeze them, because he was a dreadful cook, she said. And so she had to smell food every day, prepare it for him. Most people with this cancer can't even smell food or they get nauseated, let alone can they stand in a kitchen all day with no pain medication. She didn't want the pain medication because it would have prevented her from actively preparing these meals. And I thought to myself, this kind of compassion I have never seen. And it was so powerful, her caring about him after she left. It wasn't denying her death. She knew what was happening. He was her life. And they had no children except for a lot of dogs and cats. And I was so impressed that her compassion alone kept her mind was peaceful, devoted to him. She was not focused on herself at all, at all. And my clinical supervisor said, this is ridiculous. You need to encourage her to take medicine. I said, well, I did, but she doesn't want any. And so for those months, she prepared meals. They got another freezer so she could prepare enough meals for him that he wouldn't have to cook after she passed. And to me, it was a huge teaching that actually she had very little pain, very little discomfort. Her mind was one of the most compassionate minds I've ever known. She was a big teacher for me. And I grew a lot watching the power of somebody being completely focused on benefiting someone else, that it actually had the power to pacify her pain. And that pain, I knew very well, she should not have been pain free. How did this happen? So my scientific part's working again. How does that happen? So at the end of her life, it was pretty wonderful. I asked her if I could do a little Buddhist practice privately. And she said, yeah, I might as well cover all the bases. It was a big thing. And I got to do that at the time of her death. Her death was quite remarkable and pretty smooth. She's not religious. Most of the people I had seen die in a peaceful way in the rural area, they had strong faith. That's a whole other story. But she didn't have that, and she touched my heart more because I didn't have that. I didn't have faith, and I didn't have any spiritual inklings at all. But I started to develop huge respect for compassion, and because it was kind of like a double-blind study. She was showing me what was possible. It was a very peaceful, powerful death. And her compassion, I believe, was the reason that her death was pretty much pain-free. I know people would think I was crazy saying that, but it was true. To me, it was a big teaching about the mind of compassion. And I thought, what if I could learn more about that? And then help people develop that at the time of death, then more and more people would have that experience when they're dying, and it was a big gift.
So that's just story.
One of many, but yeah.
What's lovely about that story is, so you're there in this helping role. At the beginning, she's quite skeptical, but through just observing that individual and how she's dealing with, how her mind is protected through the power of her own love and compassion for her husband, as you're going through this experience with this lady, she's opening a door for you mm-hmm. and leading you to something that then becomes gradually over time your own way of life.
Yeah, I would say she was kind of, compassion was already becoming important to me. I just hadn't seen, I like to test things. I like to see if it's the real deal. And so she was sort of a nice, powerful confirmation of what I've been learning at the Buddhist Center, the power of compassion to protect you from suffering. At first, when I heard that, I thought, really? And then I got to see it in action through somebody who just had such beautiful compassion. And so I would say it just reinforced what I was learning. And so over the next years, I increased my activity at the Buddhist Center, of course, and learned more about the mind, how powerful it is to keep your mind positive and peaceful when things are going wrong, but also at the time of death, when at that time your body is not a cause of protection. It's actually disintegrating. And instead of being fixated on that, working with the part of you that doesn't die, I learned that that very subtle part of your mind, the deepest level, continues. I liked that, and it made sense. And when I watched deaths after that, after I had that knowledge, I really, it just increased my faith in Buddha's teachings then, because I found for me that Buddha became the ultimate scientist. I thought it was so amazing to have somebody. I learned that people that in Buddhism, faith was based on logical reasonings. I like that. And number two, your own experience. And I like that. As a scientifically kind of based person, those two ways of developing faith for me worked. I did some experiment. My experience grew. And when it came to validating the truth of the Buddhist teachings, and I liked the logical reasonings. So in the teachings, everything was described in ways that you could actually develop reasoning that functioned. And especially when it came to keeping your mind positive, protects you from suffering. That's a pretty big deal. And there's nothing physical that will do that. I saw people die with unbelievable physical pain. And if they didn't know what to do with their mind, they had unbelievable mental pain. And it was horrific exit. So I got to see the difference. And I felt very fortunate, obviously, very fortunate to be a person that was in a job where I could validate these new teachings. So at this point, I'd been doing these teachings for a little while, probably, you know, 5 or so years. And my faith was growing. My job was a component of that. And eventually I thought, you know, wouldn't it be amazing if I could help people in a bigger way now? I'd spend a lot of time taking care of people physically, which wasn't enough. I'd learned that what you really need to do is take care of the mind, the part that doesn't die. And so there was a natural segue from me from clinical nursing, and then I was asked to be a Kadampa teacher, and I started to be what I would call a spiritual nurse. And that way my job description switched. I stopped being a clinical physical nurse and then became more of a spiritual nurse as a Kadampa teacher.
I love that part when you say the part of us, or the bit of us that doesn't die, the mind continues. Yeah. And I think it's just so powerful. And with all of the experience you've had working in all of these various different nursing settings, and as you say now as a spiritual nurse, one of the things that I guess you would have insight into, more than maybe most of us would have, is that real direct experience of when people begin to realize more deeply in their heart, whether it's in an experience where you're in a hospice care or whether it's an experience of teaching people, the power of coming to a place of peace with the fact that if you're born, you're definitely going to die. Because as you know, within the Buddhist perspective and the Buddhist teachings, we meditate on that every day. This may be my last day, so how am I going to live differently if it was? But I guess for many people, this is the challenge, isn't it? And I'm sure, like in your own experience and your own speaking to people in those settings, it's just talking about it, it's really difficult for people. Like if you sit down with family and friends on any given evening, the best way to clear the table is say, let's talk about death. But actually, that fear and anxiety we think that would arise if we think too much about death actually begins to dissipate the more we really learn to accept that we will die one day, and it may even be today. So maybe from your experience, you could share a little bit about the liberating impact of reflecting on, contemplating on, meditating on death, and maybe some experience you've had with others who are able to kind of really do that work.
I think that for me personally, even as a little girl, I was terrified of death. I don't think it's uncommon for people to go into healthcare and especially hospice because they have this huge fear of death. To be honest, I think all of us have it on some level. And so the last thing we want to do is think about it. But for me, for various reasons, obviously, I think I was gently introduced into understanding that there is a part of you that is deathless. Once you find that out, and that it is a functional, it's a level of your mind. It's not something that we can't understand or know, or experience. And I felt so much comfort in that, learning that there is a deathless part. It's not functionless. It's actually, I'd like to just say, probably who we really are. And so then investing in your own mind becomes of paramount importance. And I think once you know that, then, of course, we know that eventually our body's going to die. It could be suddenly. Many people die in accidents. Many young people die. There's an illusion that you're only going to die if you get old. That's ridiculous. Now, that was always negated in hospice. We had babies on hospice. We had teenagers on hospice. People don't think that because we sort of think, okay, I'm going to have a long life because everybody in my family has. There's no logic for that statement. But I think, yeah, I'm healthy. I have good genetics. There's lots of reasons that I'll live a long life. So I'm not going to worry about death just now. My own mom, she used to say, well, I don't see any reason to think about death because I can't do anything about it. I thought, well, yeah, that's what a lot of people think. So actually going toward death, facing it, for me, in my profession, I had the good fortune to face it and watch it a lot. But that profession did not give me enthusiasm about facing my own death. It didn't. It actually, I could continue to ignore my own death and take care of dying people. Because hospice isn't a spiritual practice. It's a physical practice. So we need spiritual, from what I loved about another thing about Buddha's teachings, is that spiritual just meant inner development. It wasn't like dogma and rhetoric and all that stuff that I was hesitant about, skeptical, but it was more about inner development, developing your mind, learning about your mind, controlling your thoughts, making them positive. I thought, this is really cool. I want to do this. And then the day that I die, I'm ready. If you're on that, if that's your life, working with your own mind to benefit yourself and others, which is what Buddhism is, then you're always ready. And my own fear of death diminished to a point where I would say, at this point, it would be foolish for me to say I'm looking forward to it. I actually probably am at this point, but because of my own spiritual understanding, I probably could say that, but the process itself is uncomfortable, so it would be a little bit arrogant to say, oh, I look forward to dying now. That's not true, but my fear of death is definitely gone. And that came through understanding my mind. And so teaching people how to do that and giving them the opportunity to understand deeply from their own experience that if I work with my mind, improve my ability to stay positive when stuff is going wrong, that even when the time of my death comes, I'll be able to be positive. And in that way, I will ensure that my future lives, we learn about that, that our mind continues. Well, what does it do? It does to do something. And so then you get to learn about that. And I thought, that's nice. I wanted, because of my, a little bit irritating, I think, when I was around people, I always wanted answers. I don't know, maybe some of the people listening are like that. I didn't like, well, it's just the way it is. It didn't work for me. I needed to know exactly what's going to happen. So then we can learn things like that. And I thought, oh, I feel so much better knowing precisely what is my mind, what is my body, when my body's life is over, what happens then. You learn about that. If I keep my mind positive, I'll benefit myself because I'll be happy. I'll benefit others because I'll be happy. And people like to be with happy people. And I don't think you can be happy if you don't understand more about death, because underlying everything is that little bit of fear. So if we can address that by learning that, yeah, it's just my body that's dying. And if we know that, I like to think, I understand that now from the great scientist, Buddha. He's explained exactly what happens when my body dies, that my mind doesn't. And I feel very comfortable with that, what I'd call inner science, that knowledge. And everybody can have that. And you know what's also nice is that you can take a little bit, like maybe that's all you want to know. For my mom, who is definitely another study for me, she watched me from the beginning to the end of her life, and I had been practicing Dharma quite a while by the time she died. She was not spiritual, but at the end of her life, she said to me, you know, I've never been religious, but if I was a little bit younger, I'd probably do this Buddhist thing, because she watched me. She said, you know, you're the daughter that I always wanted. I thought, well, you can imagine my early years, but by the time I was doing this, she said, this is the kind of, that was the behavior that she'd always wanted for me, because she loved me. And I told her at the end of death, she said, I don't think anything happens. And I said, well, I can just tell you that there's a part of you, Mom, that'll continue, and that there's always a very subtle connection, and you don't need to worry. Just relax. And everything will be, just keep focused on all the good things that you've done, the people that you've loved, and I'll help you at the time of death. And it was very beautiful, actually. There were some rough parts, but that was a person who didn't have any belief. And just knowing someone that did, and giving her some confidence that it's not the end. And I think that we need to, nobody needs to believe me. We don't need to believe anyone. We just need to investigate ourselves. Find something that you rely, that you can rely upon. So Buddha's teachings about the mind are unsurpassed. And they make you feel confident in what's going to happen to your mind when this, the life of this body is over. And I would say that for me, that understanding alone changed everything. It changed everything. And I think that people deserve to have access to knowledge that is reliable and scientifically reproducible. I watched every single person I've seen die. I now understand what's happening. Therefore, I'm much more helpful in that arena because I'm not freaked out. I'm like, well, yeah, that's normal, that's normal. What happened was, just to back up a little, it was kind of a neat because when I met these teachings, I thought, this is pretty cool to understand death finally. And then I started studying a different book called A Joyful Path of Good Fortune by my teacher, Geshe Kelsang Gyatso. And this was really radical. I read in the section on death, because of course I went right to that. This was kind of early in my career, my spiritual career, but not early in my nursing career. And I opened this, The Signs of Death. It's kind of a funny story, I think. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. And I looked at the signs of death. This is from a Buddhist. I thought, this is wild. And Buddha explains precisely the distant and close signs of death. And I had, during my career, when I was exposed to this, these symptoms, I happened to have a patient who was having something very unusual. And it freaked him out. And, people tell your hospice, they tell hospice nurses things they don't tell anybody. And I had read in Buddhist teachings that one of the distant signs of death is hiccuping when you're passing your water. And I had done that not too many days before this guy said to me, he leaned over privately because his family was there, and he said, I'm really scared. I have hiccuping every time I go to the bathroom. And I was able to say to him, that's completely normal. Don't worry, Harry. And he just relaxed. And so that sounds sort of simple, but what was amazing is that I didn't learn that in nursing school. It sounds weird, doesn't it, hiccuping while you're urinating? But for him, it gave him such peace, and I was able to help him relax, and he wasn't so scared. I think it because it was such an unusual thing, it was really scaring him, even though he was on hospice. This particular thing felt really weird. And as soon as I said to him, that's completely normal, he relaxed, and he nearly cried. He was like, I was able to say that, not because of my nursing career, but because of Buddha. And when I left and got in my car, I started laughing. I thought, this is wild. I learned how to help people clinically through reading Buddha's teachings. And actually, I thought to myself, I like this guy. I think I'm going to do this for a while. It was like that.
That's phenomenal. All of that confidence we can all develop over time. We can all develop this insight. We can all develop this experience. We can even get to know our mind at a very deep level, directly, experientially, through meditating on the nature of consciousness or the nature of the mind. Like, if we haven't trained in those methods and we think, I may die today, it's very easy to feel a lot of anxiety and fear initially. But as we deepen that familiarity in our heart through these meditations that we're given within these particular meditations within the Buddhist tradition, on I may die today, that's such a deeply empowering and liberating impact on our mind, because we really start to feel this freedom. You know, like in the meditation on death and impermanence, we're encouraged at the end to think, as we go through this contemplation, definitely going to die. Don't know when. It may be today. We think, I may die today. We're encouraged to focus on that thought, I may die today, and the feeling it evokes. And to me, when I contemplate that, or when I meditate, the feeling is freedom. Freedom from all the things I'm worried about, all the things I'm obsessing about that might happen tomorrow, because now I feel free. Free from all those worldly concerns, if I'm deepening that experience, and I'm free to live my best life today. Because I think that's the bit I'd love to encourage everyone to think about. If you really take this deep to heart, it does liberate the mind, and it opens up the door to this inner journey, this spiritual path, this spiritual journey within our hearts, that inner development. But that inner development is us increasingly living from a peaceful mind and a good heart. As we take these teachings more deeply to heart, we apply them and how we live our day in life, and how we help others in this context. So I'd love to hear from you, your insights into that, that kind of freedom that comes, and the empowering nature of that kind of reflection, contemplation, meditation, that we may die today, and how that empowers us to live our best life.
There is freedom, freedom from worry, freedom from fear, and a liberation from being tied to the beginning and the end of this one life, and in particular the body. And it does liberate. I definitely feel like it's liberating. And because most of my life I had an underlying fear of death, when I met Buddhist teachings or Kadampa teachings, I actually faced that death and learned more about the freedom that comes from working with your mind, concentrating on your mind. And what comes to my mind is in the book Living Meaningfully and Dying Joyfully, which sounded pretty radical to me. Yeah, living meaningfully and dying joyfully, I thought, whoa. But even in the first page, there's three questions that the author, Geshe Kelsang, asked, and they really changed my life. And the question was, with so much freedom, because we have a lot of freedom in our normal modern life, most of us, in particular, had a lot of freedom. What's the most meaningful thing I could do with my life? And when you think about that, we think that I have a lot of freedom. I can be anything. I can be a professional. I could be a family person. I could be a nurse. I could be a doctor. Whatever. There's so many things we could do. And so then we're thinking, what do I want to do with that freedom? And the question is, with so much freedom, what will make me happy now? What will benefit others most? And when my life is over, what will help me then? I never forgot. That helped me so much. I thought, I need to do something that will make me happy now. Of course, I want that. That will benefit others most. I believe in that. It's been my life. And then here's the key. And when my life is over, what will help me then? So then the answer is spiritual development, which means changing my mind, making my mind more positive, more peaceful. Will that help me now? Yep. Will that help others? Yep. Even my mom, who was very stubborn? Yep. Even people like Harry. Everybody benefits when you have access to a positive, peaceful mind. And then when my life is over, could be today, what will help me then? The only thing that's going to help me is a mind that's positive, because it's my mind that's going to go to future lives, the future next moment. You know, when you learn that at the moment of death, the next moment, you have a different life. Just kind of a simple way to look at it. But if I invest in my mind, that gives you freedom, because it's freedom that goes beyond the limits of this body and this one life. And so you're tuned in to like an extraordinary future. And you feel like, yes, I want my life to be meaningful. I want to be happy. I want to benefit others. Everybody wants that on some level. We're good people. But we have to learn how to develop our capacity to love, to be patient, to be kind and wise. That's all mental development, not brain development, mind development, very different. And if I have mastered my ability to be compassionate, which means to be focused on the suffering of others and to wish for it to cease. So one of the things that I learn in Buddhist Kadampa, science of the mind, is that if I'm able to stay compassionate when I'm dying, my mind will be protected from suffering, not only in the moment of death, but in the next moment, so that you ride on that mind of compassion right into an amazing next life. I thought, well, what could be better than that? And everybody can learn how to do that. You know, I helped people at the end of my nursing career so that when I was with them at death, I could help them remember their compassionate feelings. And in that way, without knowing it, it kept them positive when they're dying. It helped their family because they weren't afraid. And it ensured a good life for them in the future. And that was for non-Buddhists. Because I don't think it gets better than that. It's like good for everybody. And so compassion is just one thing that you can focus on when you're dying. But those three questions that the author of the book asked really changed my life, because that's what I wanted. I wanted something that would make me happy now, of course. I wanted something that would benefit others most. And I wanted, when my life was over, something that would protect me then, because I was scared. And all of that came from learning more about the freedom of focusing on your mind rather than the limits of your body. Also, I think the freedom that you're talking about too is that one of the many cool things you learn about the mind is that it's formless and it's limitless. And I thought to myself, limitless? And if that's who I really am, if I'm really not my body, and I really am my mind, and my mind is limitless, I thought, that's outrageous. I'm a limitless. So you start to identify with a new person that's limitless. I remember the first time I heard that, and I thought, limitless. If I focus on my body, I'm really limited. If I focus on this one life, I'm really limited. But if I focus on my potential and what can happen by working with my mind at so many levels, never get bored. I used to be afraid of being bored. Since I've met Kadampa Dharma, I've never been bored. And, you know, identifying with a limitless self is pretty darn cool. Everybody needs that. We get stuck being afraid of everything. We're afraid of sickness. We're afraid of dying. We're afraid of others. We're afraid of being with others. We're afraid of being alone. We're afraid of everything. Maybe just me. But when you start to understand your mind and you get that understanding is validated in your own experience, it's not because somebody's telling you, you need to believe this. It's validated in your daily life. You start to feel exhilarated. I would say that freedom is exhilarating, and it isn't difficult. It is not hard to do. It just takes a little investment in yourself, only not the body, not for yourself alone, but really learning how to tap in to the one part of you that has no limits, your mind. Outrageous. Buddha's outrageous. I love him.
Beautiful. And I think, talking to you a little bit earlier, reading the research notes as well, this kind of whole arc has kind of come back for you from being this scientific-leaning, slightly skeptical individual at the beginning of this journey to actually quite a difficult situation for you from one perspective, maybe not from your perspective, from a difficult situation where in 2023, having spent your early life helping people as a cardiac nurse, you then find yourself in 2023 having to undergo open heart surgery. And I think it's just a very beautiful story to really summarize everything we've been looking at today, how you've approached that. So we're literally talking 8 months ago. So we're sitting here in 2024, 8 months after that. And I think there's some beautiful insights that when we were chatting earlier on, I thought would be so helpful for people to really make sense of everything we've been talking about today. Maybe you could share that story a little bit.
Yeah, thank you, Adam. I do think it's kind of a culmination of my whole life, an analogy, sort of interesting. We think I have a lot of karma with cardiac. So I was in cardiac nursing and then also had cardiac disease. And last year I needed to have open heart surgery. I'd worked in open heart surgery, so I knew physically exactly what was going to happen. Now that in itself was not peace inducing because I knew that it was quite extensive. And so the difference is my target, I didn't have very much time to prepare. I did ask if I could have a few days, mainly practically, but my main preparation now, 23 years after meeting these teachings, or this path, whatever we like to call it, this knowledge, the science of the mind from Buddhist teachings, my focus was 100%, how am I going to protect my mind? What do I need to do with my mind as I undergo this bodily procedure that's quite extensive? If I had had this when I was simply a nurse, I would have been completely focused on the body. Probably would have said, knock me out, make sure it works, whatever. Well, you're definitely knocked out. But this time I was completely focused on what's the best way to prepare my mind. And while there were a lot of levels of that preparation, I only had 3 days, I mainly was focused on how can I stay positive, compassionate, and peaceful as I'm heading into the operating room and knowing that my body is going to be invaded for my benefit, of course. It's a little bit like, this is probably one of my silly analogies, but I used it when I was giving my last teaching at the center, which I thought might be my last teaching. I was completely 50-50. That could be my last teaching, so I taught it like my last teaching. And what I told them is, I'm just taking my body in to the shop for some body work. And I really felt that way. I was just taking my body into the shop to have some body work. I would not have felt that way 23 years ago. I would have been terrified, actually. But in this case, I thought, well, I'm going to have some work done. My job, if we use the analogy, maybe extend it a little bit, is that the thing that makes the car work is the driver. So the thing that makes my body work is my mind. I need to work with that because it's not having surgery. My body's having surgery. So I really gave some nice quiet time, did a little meditation, prepared physically what I needed to do, but mentally really, really focused on, I am going to be other focused. I'm going to think about all the people that are going through surgery today. I'm going to keep my mind connected to my own personal path. And my main job is to stay peaceful and other focused as I enter the operating room. And it was very good preparation. I was okay to die, and I was okay to live. I didn't know. Either way, I would say that I was about as fearless as you could be and about as happy as you could be. And I never thought that would be possible. So to me, it was a little bit like a final exam. Although I have a little time left, whatever it is, could be the end of day. But I feel I wanted so much to learn what death was all about. I really wanted to be able to share that with others if I ever found an answer. And it did. For me, I found an answer, and I understand so much more about the mind. I feel very lucky. And I do know that probably to all of those who are listening, you know, sometimes we don't feel like we can do much in the world. And as we look at our world, it seems like we can do less. But the truth is, and I believe this with all my heart, is that one thing we can do is by increasing our what we call wisdom, but it's like knowledge, like the knowledge we're talking about, knowledge about your mind, valuing your states of mind, your importance, that having one peaceful, positive person in the world isn't nothing. And that if you live your life to take your own negativity out of this world and infuse your own positivity, that's a meaningful life, isn't it? If we learn how to, I want to take my negativity out of my family. I want to take my negativity out of my community. And we just keep it local. And we think, well, isn't that a meaningful life? If I've taken my fear out of the world, my own fear, and infused some fearlessness, infused a love of compassion and some kindness, you start to realize that one of the analogies that I love in Buddhism, because it's kind of body and science thing, is that we are like a cell, a little cell, this is my nursing, a little cell in the vast body of life. I love that. And I knew that if one cell is unhealthy, the whole body will be affected. If one cell is healthy, the whole body is affected. And what it did and still does for me is it gives me so much hope. The quality of my thoughts, the caliber of my attitude, is it positive? Is it negative? It does make a difference. It makes a difference to the people around you, to your world, your personal world. And facing death gives you an ability to prioritize investing in your mind like the engine house of your reality from one point of view, and think, at the end of my life, it's been a meaningful life. I've tried to eliminate my negativity in my own little world and tried to infuse positivity to the best of my ability. And even at the end of what I thought was the end of my life, if I could just do that in the operating room, I thought to myself, these people are so kind. They're so loving. I feel like I'm so cared for. When you go under anesthesia with that mind, is very different from I'm freaked out. So it's the same thing in our life. If what we do with our life is transform our own mind from a negative to positive, and we naturally infuse that into the world we live, our family, our friends, I think that's a meaningful life. And then on the day of our death, we'll have no regrets.
So, Gen Gamlan, I couldn't think of a better way to, I have nothing to say to that because that's just perfect for everyone to take away from this conversation. I've so enjoyed this, really deeply enjoyed this today, and there's so much for, I'm sure for everyone listening, there's so much wisdom there, so much insight, so much experience. It's very kind of you to share all of that, so I really appreciate that. So thank you so much for dropping into the podcast today.
Thank you, Emma, very much. I appreciated that.